Welcome back, WNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I have decided to go with the celebratory look behind me for the Ravens because, you know, we all want to get an A on our report card after the draft. And, you know, I had some memories over the weekend sharing some words with Phil Savage online and sharing some old pictures of the barn and days of yore and ice cream with Ron Marcinak. But, eight draft picks, dealing up, dealing back, dealing forward, and lo and behold, Luke Jones, they filled some needs, right? Just like I filled some needs with some Royal Farms chicken over the weekend while I was watching the draft. It lingered on, and, you know, the Ravens are as good at this as anyone when it comes to we have a need, we're going to address it. If you don't see them address it in the draft, you know what they thought of the draft? They thought we're better off getting a free agent, and that's what they're going to do at right tackle, right?
Yeah, I mean, and let's start there before we get in terms of trying to address needs. And look, we know best player available, but we know it's really best player available trying to address as many needs as you can, right? I mean, you don't want to reach, but certainly if you have best player available of at a position that you need compared to a position where you're okay, then yeah, you're going to go for the position of need. So, but you just said it. I think for as much as we heard about how talented this offensive tackle class was, and you and I talked about this last week, we know that the top two or three on the board were never going to come close to getting to the Ravens at 27 or 31. So you understand that in the same way that Rashad Bateman was the fourth, at best, the fourth best wide receiver. We know the top three went in the top 10, and then you could debate Bateman and some of the other guys. I think when it really came down to it, as much as guys like you and me and the Mel Kuypers and the Todd McShays and the Matt Millers and, go through the list of all the different draft pundits. We talked about Tevin Jenkins and some guys like that, but Stroud, Rashad Bateman, and Odafe Owe higher on their board. And those are both positions of need as well. So when you're in a position where you pick 27th and 31st, and then you're not picking again until the end of the third round at 94th, it's going to be tough to grab that next tier of offensive tackle and feel good about that as far as someone that can come in and start right away. Yeah, you could take a developmental guy, but is he going to be ready to be Orlando Brown come week one and be a starter? Probably not. I mean, Orlando Brown didn't start till halfway through his rookie year as a third rounder, and a guy who, remember, was kind of have a first round thought until the combine. So you never know how it's going to play out. You never know exactly how each team is going to stack their board. We know the Ravens in the past have valued certain players at a very highly, and it didn't work out. And other times the Ravens grab a player and you kind of wonder and you say, oh, where'd that come from? The pundits weren't talking about him. And then you see, it makes sense 2 or 3 years later. So I think by and large, you look at this draft, I think you love the combination of their other needs being addressed other than right tackle and maybe defensive line, but that's not shocking because this wasn't considered a good defensive tackle class whatsoever. But they addressed other needs, and I think they also got some intriguing upside guys. I mean, we've talked a lot about Owe. We'll continue to talk a lot about Owe because of how important he's going to be for their edge rush, pass rush, outside linebacker situation. But you look at some of the guys that they got on day two and day three. I mean, I mentioned Brandon Stevens. That one was kind of out of left field. He was someone that was not all that highly touted, and the Ravens take him at the end of the third round. We'll see. I'm not going to sit here and say that I get that one exactly now, but they clearly see some upside, some developmental potential in him. You look at what they got in Sean Wade, Ohio State, a guy who, if he doesn't play football in 2020 for the Buckeyes, I don't think he would have been a first round pick like some people said, but he's probably a day two guy and had a bad year playing on the outside, but he's a guy who has proven himself as a nickel corner. The Ravens have Tavon Young, who hasn't been able to stay on the field. Sean Wade could be their slot corner by this time next year. So I think you look at some of the needs, immediate needs that guys you point to that have a great chance to come in and play meaningful snaps in 2021. But I think they also got some interesting guys that probably aren't going to do a whole lot this year. But I think you look at some of their positional needs 2022 and beyond, and the salary cap and contractual situations. And you want that combination. You don't want to just have a checklist of needs, check, 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 but you're not getting the right value. You're not getting enough upside. On the flip side, yeah, you want to draft some players that are going to help you right away when you're a team that's competing for a Super Bowl. So when you kind of look at the whole the draft in its totality, the 8 picks they made in the first 5 rounds, that was great, by the way, 5 rounds and then done rather than waiting to the very end. But I think you have to be pleased with what they were able to do while fully acknowledging right tackle remains a question. And even if they drafted a right tackle, we'd still have questions until you get the guy in the building, get the guy on the practice field and see what he looks like. So you're never getting answers on draft day. You're getting potential answers. And I think there's a lot of potential to like with this draft class.
Luke Jones is here. He is he's getting the sleep out of his eyes from late nights with the Oakland A's and the Orioles over the weekend going to Seattle and breaking the draft down. We'll be doing this with lots of people all week long as we mix in other conversations here at Baltimore Positive. Obviously, the Kentucky Derby was a big weekend, which really weird. The draft conflicted with the Derby. That's never happened in 25 years of doing this, which pushes us up on the Preakness, which is right around the corner right now. And we have a Bob Baffert winner. So a lot of things going on. But the draft sits at the top of all of it. And I guess Bateman and the other wide receiver who sort of fell down the board, right? So you mentioned why would they go in that direction. There's a kid there that was mocked into the second and third round a lot, much higher up than where they took him. But the wide receiver position, for as much angst as you had, as much angst as every guest we had here, whether it was nerds at, you know, Mike Tenier and these guys that are football outsider, Aaron Schatz talking wide receiver, or whether it's just Joe Sixpack talking wide receiver, or whether it was, you know, my friend Brian Lease from Roofing by Elite, who was wide receiver, and, you know, beginning at the beginning where all 8 of the wide receivers that were going to get $12 million plus, then they finally bring Sammy Watkins in, and then, you know, you get a question in at the Liars Luncheon. I get a question, and I get B-slapped, you know, in the Liars Luncheon, and we're offended, and we're afraid. Then they go and draft 2 wide receivers. So, I don't know what to say other than I didn't think it was any sort of red herring on my part or anyone else's part. I'm sort of shocked they took 2 wide receivers. I'm shocked they went wide receiver in the first round. I mean, there's a lot to stand on the outside of this, even before the draft started when they gave Orlando Brown around away for draft picks, where we'd say, you can't really guess what they're going to do. I mean, you know, this isn't anything old world or new world, but the amount of possibilities for them are, it's like a lotto ticket. You never have any idea what they're going to do.
Sure. Well, and that's what makes the draft fun anyway. I mean, for all 32 teams, you don't know if you're going to draft the next Tom Brady or, you know, you're going to draft the next Mike Mamula, you know? I mean,
or your draft room is going to have like a camera in there that's going to make it look like you drafted the last Mike Mamula.
Sure, sure. Yeah. I mean, it's funny to see the reactions of these different war rooms. And look, I mean, the Ravens, typically you see them, they're having fun, they're laughing, they're smiling. And then some other ones like New England, they draft their, you know, Mac Jones falls in their lap. I mean, like, good for them. Like, they didn't even have to move up for him. And yet it looked like they're getting ready to go to a funeral. It's funny to see the different dynamics in each war room. But you know, to go back to what you said, the wide receiver thing, look, I think it, no matter how bullish you were about it, how concerned, how much angst, how flippant, how not concerned some people, you know, how unconcerned some people were about it and saying, well, this team runs the ball. They don't want to throw the ball. I think it, you know, I wasn't surprised by Bateman and I think it was good value. And I think there's a strong argument to be made. He was the 4th best wide receiver in this draft class. Once you get beyond those 3 that went in the top 10, but I think Eric DaCosta said it and you made mention about the insulted comment. Remember, it's the Liars Luncheon. Maybe a reminder of, let's not exactly be losing sleep getting excited for that one based on how this played out. But he talked about Tylan Wallace and he flat out said it. And I think he absolutely was telling a very sincere truth here. He flat out said, we thought he was too good of a player to pass up there. I don't think they went into this draft necessarily thinking we're going to draft 2 wide receivers in the first 4 rounds. I think they very clearly were targeting a wide receiver early based on the names that were there, whether we were talking about Bateman or, you know, some, Terrace Marshall before the medical red flags. I mean, there had been a lot of chatter about them taking a wide receiver in the first round, especially when you get two after you trade Orlando Brown and you know you have two picks at the end of the first round. So I'm not surprised by that, but I think they liked Wallace that much. And you mentioned it. I mean, this is a kid who had an ACL tear at the end of 2019, but you look at his three seasons at Oklahoma State, very productive. And I'm not going to lie and say that I've watched a ton of him during his collegiate career, but he has a reputation for being a little chippy, plays with a little edge. I've seen the Steve Smith personality comparison be thrown out there. Not that he's going to be a borderline Hall of Fame wide receiver, but I think he's someone that does offer something a little bit different in their room. And again, is he going to play a whole lot in 2021? I'd be lying if I sat here with confidence and said, yes, I think Tylan Wallace is going to be on the field a ton. I think Bateman will be on the field a ton. But I do think you look at the fact that Sammy Watkins, 1 year deal. We'll see if he stays healthy. Does he have some kind of renaissance in Baltimore or much of the same as in Kansas City? And he moves on. Someone like Wallace steps right in. Keep in mind, Marquise Brown is not that terribly far away from the end of his rookie contract. And when you're paying your quarterback over $100 million like the Ravens are going to be doing at some point in the near future, you've got to decide. It might come down to Mark Andrews.
Breaking those kids up would be like breaking up Scope and Machado. You know what I mean?
I hear you, but you have to make these decisions, though. Hey, let's face it. This is the organization that threw Anquan Boldin away for a lottery ticket at the end of the 2013 draft, and he won you something. I mean, Marquise Brown has played well in three playoff games, but they haven't won anything with him. So, you know, it is one of those things where you want to leave yourself options. You want to have outs. You know, for how many years, you know, going all the way back to the Joe Flacco era and even before that, I mean, look at Travis Taylor, who was a bust. I mean, he had his moments. You know, we all remember the Miami playoff game, but by and large, considering he was 10th overall, he was a bust. Yet, look how many games he started in Baltimore. Look how long the Ravens held on to him. And part of that reason was they didn't really have any alternatives. So you bring in this collection of young guys, and that's not to say they're all going to make it. Let's face it. Miles Boykin now going into year three, he's looking over his shoulder after this draft. I mean, he has to be. You know, I don't think he's a lock to make the roster at this point.
Yeah, you started to like get the depth chart out, and you've been around this long enough to see like you're on the wrong side of the pipeline. You're not getting on the field. You're going to be going the route of Arthur Brown. And I mean, we go down the line of all the John Simons, all the guys that just get Darren Waller, you know, there's a great example.
I mean, so much of it was the off field with the drugs. I mean, they always thought he was talented, but you're right. I mean, you get to a point where you have so many numbers at each position that you just can't keep everyone. And to be very clear, I'm not saying Miles Boykin is done, but my point is he's not just showing up in Owings Mills for mini camp and training camp and going to be having a starting spot or being a quote lock on the roster anymore. When you have Devin Duvernay and James Prochet as a 6th-round pick, he's clearly someone who's going to have to make the team this summer. So you bring in these two kids who are talented, really productive in college. I think, and I asked John Harbaugh about this a little bit, and Eric DaCosta alluded to it as well. Keep in mind, they brought in T. Martin and Keith Williams to specifically focus on the wide receiver position and development there. Those guys definitely had their opinions, you know, solicited as far as looking at prospects. So these are their guys, so to speak. And that's not to say they don't like the incumbents, but these are guys that had some input with this draft evaluation process and said, yeah, we think we can win with Rashad Bateman. Yeah, we think Tylan Wallace in the 4th round is outstanding value. So you just look at that. And as much as you hear coaches say this, and you'll hear the front office say this after the draft every single year, there's a lot of intriguing, enticing competition. And that's not to say Rashad Bateman's going to become a true number one and fulfill that white whale that the Ravens have never been able to harness as far as having a drafting and developing their own true number one wide receiver. That's not to say Wallace is going to be a 4th-round stud. I mean, he might be Chris Moore. You know, at one point in time, the Ravens were excited about Chris Moore as a wide receiver before he becomes just a special teams guy, and that's it. So you never know, but I just think, more than anything, and I wrote this at BaltimorePositive.com the day after, you know, afternoon after the 1st round, Eric DaCosta, said this a few years ago. I can recall back in the days when we were there in person after the Liars luncheon, he would hold court. And this was his last year as assistant GM. This was Ozzie's swan song year, even though he's still there, we know. But
They drafted Lamar Jackson.
Right. But one thing that we talked to Eric DaCosta about at the time was wide receiver. I mean, and this was the time where they were drafting wide receivers, but it was always be the day three guys, right? I mean, always the guys, you know, Tommy Streeter and Aaron Millett. I mean, guys that didn't really have much of a chance to make anything because they aren't that highly touted. And he flat out said then that we have to look at this a little bit differently than we have in the past. While we think that there's some talent inflation going on at that position, we have to make a decision. Are we going to continue to say everyone else is wrong and we're going to be left out of that conversation and it's going to hurt us in terms of trying to win football games? Or do we need to look at ourselves in the same way that we would all agree quarterback value tends to be inflated? Why? Because it's the most important position by far. Nothing else compares. So yeah, quarterbacks get overdrafted because it's so important. So I think with Eric DaCosta acknowledging that 3 years ago at this point in time, and now seeing what they've done, 2019, first round, Marquise Brown, third round, Miles Boykin, last year, third round, Devin Duvernay, sixth round, James Prochet. Okay, day three, whatever. And now this year, first round pick, wide receivers twice in the last 3 years, knowing that they would sometimes go a decade without, or sometimes longer than that, in drafting a first round wide receiver. And then they come around and they see such great value with Tylan Wallace. They say, hey, we got to take another one. So what is he doing? Which he acknowledged 3 years ago, taking more swings at the wide receiver position. And let's face it, I think we have three free agent periods now to look at what this offense is and how that relates to veteran wide receivers.
It ain't coming from there.
So this goes back, you know, let's go back. Let's throw back to the days of Andy McPhail, grow the arms, buy the bats. Well, you can't necessarily buy the wide receivers unless you're going to overpay an ungodly amount, which you're getting into how much of it is the juice worth the squeeze there, knowing that they're not going to throw the ball 45 times a game, but you go and you find guys that you think are really good fits. Guys that have strengths that mesh well with what Lamar Jackson's strengths are as a passer, and you organically improve your passing game. Then now, does that mean they're going to throw the ball 40, 45 times? Does that mean their passing yards per game is going to go from 32 to ninth? No. But if it elevates their yards per attempt, if it elevates their efficiency, if it gets Lamar Jackson back to a point where he's vying for the league lead in touchdown passes like he led the league 2 years ago, then couple that with a running game that should continue to be the best.
If it gives them one more possession in a fourth quarter, it takes 3.5 minutes off the clock and wins them a football game because they can convert a third and 11 because somebody held on the last play and somebody tripped and they got in a bad D&D. And instead of saying, Sam, come on, let's go play defense against Josh Allen or whomever it would be, Baker Mayfield, Joe Burrow, whoever it's going to be, let's give them the ball back. Let's convert a third, take the ball, take the air back out, run it, and get out of here. Get on a plane.
Yeah, I mean, you want to have options. You want to have outs, right? The last few years, when we've talked about the Ravens coming up short in January, we've said what? They need to be able to play better when they're off schedule. They want to run the ball. We know that. But the other team tries too, right? And the other team's going to make plays, and you're going to make some mistakes from time to time, whether it's a penalty or, you know, a fumble or something that gets you off schedule and gets you in a less than ideal down and distance. You've got to be able to function at a higher level than they've been able to do that. And I think some of the moves that they've made gives them the potential to do that. I mean, there's some speed. You know, both of these guys, you know, they're 6 foot and 5'11", but I think if you look at some of the pundits and some of the analysis and you watch these guys make plays, they both play a little bit bigger than their size indicates. Now, again, going up against Illinois' defensive back rather than going up against an all-pro corner in the NFL, it's a different ball game, and we understand that, and that's true for everyone that's making the jump to the next level. But I think there's, you know, there's intrigue with these guys, and it's not to say I think that their wide receiver group becomes the best or a top five or a top 10 overnight, but I think there's potential. There's growth, potential growth and upside with this group. And I mean, you've got to like the fact how young it is. I mean, other than Sammy Watkins, I mean, talking about a bunch of guys that are under the age of 25. That's fun, considering your quarterback's 24. So there's just a lot of potential in that way. We know they have a lot of work to do. We know a lot of this comes down to spring and summer and training camp and getting the reps there and even the preseason, which they didn't have preseason games last year. So, you know, they've got a lot of work to do. But I think as it relates to the passing game, and, you know, we can get into Ben Cleveland in a moment because he's going to relate to that most likely, or at least have a chance to on the offensive line. I think you have to like what they were able to do. I think both of these wide receivers just really good value. And now we'll see them go to work and see if Greg Roman has the answers for how to best utilize these guys.
He is Luke Jones. He's Baltimore Luke and Luke at WNST.net. All of our WNST intelligent conversations brought to you by our friends at Wise Markets. We're eating better. We're spending less and picked up some salad over the weekend. Always enjoying those organic blueberries and strawberries and raspberries. We got Mother's Day coming up this week as well. So make sure you're out there making the wise choice. And you get those delivery groceries delivered or curbside them at Wise to go. I did it myself. My dark chocolate order will never be the same in my Rofo coffee in the mornings. Luke can be found anywhere that baseball or football is treading. I'm doing a lot of Preakness stuff this week. Also want to give a shout out to my friend Victor Brick and Lynn Brick, who are doing an event on May the 21st. I'll be telling you more about with our friends at Planet Fitness as well. We're not going to stop this football conversation. We're going to continue going through the players, the situations, the edge rusher, the offensive line, the safety from Ohio State, all of that and more. We are WNST.net, AM 1570, Towson, Baltimore, and we never stop talking Baltimore positive.